Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On Podcast, where we talk about issues affecting veterans after they get out of the military. Before we get started, I'd like to ask a favor. If you haven't done so already, please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. If you've already done that, thank you. These ratings help the show get discovered so it can reach a wider audience. And while you're there, click the subscribe button so that you get notified of new episodes as soon as they come out. If you don't use Apple Podcasts, you can visit driveonpodcast.com/subscribe to find other ways of subscribing, including our email list. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everyone, today my guest is Ryan Britch. Ryan served with my brother in Afghanistan back in 2010 with the Vermont Army National Guard, and he currently works for the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. Ryan, it's great to get you on the show and to chat with you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and what you do with Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America?
Yeah, and Scott, first, just it's a pleasure to be on the show with you, and thanks for creating this podcast and sharing all these stories for fellow vets. So my name's Ryan Britch. I grew up in very rural Vermont and graduated high school in 2009. Joined the Vermont Army National Guard because I wanted an adventure and grew up poor, wanted to go to college, so I thought it would be a great opportunity for some college money. I joined Alpha Company, 3rd of the 172nd, about 2 months before we were supposed to deploy to Afghanistan. I was assigned to be a SOG gunner in 3rd Platoon, 1st Squad, Alpha Team, and your brother Steve was my team leader. So also in our Steve was Corey Teft. He was our RTO, and then our Grenadier, Jesse Garcia. You know, Steve was a pretty unique leader, made a really conscious effort to share his knowledge with us and, you know, to ensure that we were always safe from digging foxholes, eating chow, you know, pulling 4 hours of guard duty out at the OP or just joking around and playing basketball. Steve was always with us. So I'm always very thankful for the experience to be in Steve's team and for everything that he imparted on me.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, little background there, and you know, that personal story too. You know, we had spoken last week, and you told me a little bit about, you know, his impact on your life and everything, and you know, I shared that with my parents over the weekend, and you know, it's good to hear those types of stories, you know, and who he was and who he's impacted, you know, throughout his life, because, you know, as people grow up and they become adults and they move on their own path, you don't always know all of their friends and everything like that. And so it's cool to hear these stories from people who knew him. And that was one of the probably more selfish reasons why I wanted to have you on the show and talk with you, even though we talked the other day, you know, a little bit. But one of the reasons, there are a few reasons why I wanted to have you on the podcast, but one of them is that, you know, when we spoke last week, you told me about some of the therapy treatment situation that you went through after getting back, the prolonged exposure therapy. Mm-hmm. Would you mind going back a bit and telling us about what prompted you to start seeking this therapy? And then, you know, we can kind of get into, you know, what that's all about and everything.
Yeah, sure. So I think I'd backtrack a little bit first and really just highlight how the war impacted me. And I think my deployment to Afghanistan left a profound impact on me, and not necessarily the combat and the post-traumatic stress and the moral injury, but I think the men that I was exposed to, and I'll use that terminology because, you know, this is back in 2009, women weren't allowed to be in combat arms. I never had the chance to serve with women, so I'm sure there's some great female leaders out there in the Army, but I just never got to serve with them. So I'll talk about the men that I served with, and particularly the Green Mountain Boys. And, you know, they were a bunch of troublemakers, and, you know, at the same time, they were intelligent, humble, and, you know, composed professionals. Well-read, hard-drinking, skiers, outdoorsmen, adventurers, wholesome, you know, mountain men. And, you know, sometimes they were blasphemous and abrasive and would often resort to settling disagreements with their fists. you know, we spent a lot of time drinking and getting at shenanigans, sometimes probably more than, you know, time we spent honing our military skills. But, you know, at the same time, they were men of virtue, and, you know, they left an unspeakable impact on my soul. And I don't think I ever felt more at home my entire life. But at the same time, I think that the love that we had for each other made the pain of losing a brother even more soul ripping. When I came home, I was pretty lost. You know, I was very irritable, you know, unsure where I thought life was going to take me, pretty angry and numb at losing Steve and Tristan. And I hope that the war would kind of become like everything else in my life, distant. And it took a really long time for me to come home. I think PE was definitely one of the right steps for me. So I had done a pretty good job of managing my adjustment issues after coming home from Afghanistan. And I felt like I had things really under control. It wasn't until I went to a New Year's Eve party in Burlington, 2018. So this is eight years after my deployment to Afghanistan. It was a great night. There was a live band. There was, people were celebrating. Yeah, we had a few drinks. You know, I'm a big gin and tonic guy. So I had a few gin and tonics. And at midnight, the balloons came down. People were cheering. People were kissing. I felt like I was on cloud nine. And then a couple seconds later, after the balloons came down, people started popping the balloons. And that was the trigger to what I now know was a flashback. And I don't know if you ever have experienced one yourself, but it's a pretty horrifying experience. Like all of a sudden I had this wave of all these unwelcome memories just like come rushing into me. And it felt like as if I was in combat again. Like, you know, that feeling when the valley you're patrolling in just erupts in fire, and my mind was telling me to seek cover. But at the same time, like I knew that I wasn't in combat. I knew I was at this venue at a New Year's Eve, celebration. So I felt very helpless. Like there was nothing I could do.
Mm-hmm.
So here I am at this venue, just hysterically and uncontrollably sobbing and bawling my eyes out. But luckily my best friend and my ex knew what was going on, and they got me outside into a cab and they got me home. And the next morning she was like, you need to go get treatment.
Yeah. And there are so many different things that are triggers. And I think we talked a little bit about this last week, but everything from sounds to smells to, feeling other senses, they all are really closely tied to, your memories. I think I told you the story last week of, my wife was cutting some peppers in the kitchen, and the smell of it brought me back to my grandfather's garden when I was a kid. And that was a good, pleasant memory. Like it was a fun time. It was a happy time. Things were good. But it brought me back there. And I was like, keep chopping those things, 'cause that's a good thing. Yeah. That smell had a positive connotation associated with it. But there are things that smells, sounds, sights, things like that, that are definitely tied to those negative emotions, a firefight that you were in, or, especially a firefight that was traumatic where you've lost somebody, in that situation, that is tied to those memories as well. And when you start hearing sounds that remind you of that, it definitely could take you back. So at this point you realize there are some issues going on, and that, and you start going, it was at the VA that you went for this treatment. Is that correct?
Exactly. So yeah. Prolonged exposure is actually like the perfect treatment for what you're talking about now. Those unwanted memories that are coming up from a traumatic experience that you've had. And there are a lot of triggers and smells, as you highlighted, sounds, other triggers, and prolonged exposure is one of the two evidence-based trauma-focused psychotherapies that VA offers in order to help veterans identify and fix the root cause of post-traumatic stress, which is those traumatic events. So I reached out to VA pretty much right. It was like either the day or the day after that had happened. It took a couple months. You got to do your intake, your assessment. You got to wait until there's a therapist who's available. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, there's a huge staffing issue at VA, but it's there. It's an issue that that they're very well aware of. And you know, we've got some legislation that we're trying to fix that staffing issue. But so I finally got set up with a mental health professional at VA. So I met with her, I think about twice a week, doing 90-minute sessions. Did that for about 16 weeks. You know, depending on your schedule, how you have work or family obligations, they might ask you to come in once a week, might schedule you for, for a longer or shorter period of therapy. And, so you and your therapist will go over like your specific goals, your specific experiences and topics that you're going to cover for over each session. It's a very laid out process, and you know what you're going to be getting into. And, my therapist even gave me homework to take home. And, prolonged exposure is definitely what I would classify as like high risk, high reward. There's a really high dropout rate because it's hard. You have to deal with all these repressed memories that you've had, from really traumatic experiences.
And what is the process like? So I can tell based on, from our conversation, I know more about it, but, for the people who might be listening and are not familiar with what prolonged exposure therapy is all about, what is that process like?
Yeah. So there's two main aspects of prolonged exposure. And the first is what they call imaginals. So this is like a repeated retelling of your traumatic memory or numerous traumatic memories, as most of us, combat vets have. And so that's, the first person retelling of your trauma, to your psychotherapist. And, each session you could retell that trauma, 10, 12, 15 times. And the focus is really spent on bringing the intimate details of these memories that you block out. Memories like what type of footwear, the dead insurgent had on, or what they looked like once, when you saw them. So like very intimate details. And there were things that I had completely forgotten, probably most that I had avoided or blocked out. But it was a really interesting experience, retelling the trauma that you experienced, in such a detailed manner. And it's crazy, the memories that you block out and what that feels like when you retell them and they come back to you.
Yeah. And your mind can do some crazy things too, by suppressing some of these memories. And I don't know, I'm not a doctor, and just for clarification for the people who are listening, neither are you. And so, what you're talking about here is from your own experience with this and your own personal background, not any medical or technical stuff that goes into this, outside of your own, experience. So I don't want listeners to, think that you're the subject matter expert on this, that you've created this therapy or, form of therapy or anything like that. It's you're talking from your experience, but your mind can certainly suppress lots of different things. And I don't know if it's for, self-defense kind of mechanism to protect you from, too much exposure to this bad stuff, or whatever the case may be. But, it certainly can affect how your mind works, and you can get five people who were exposed to the same situation, and you'll have five different five different ways that they tell you that the situation went down because their memories just play different tricks on them, and it's kind of crazy when you see all that happening. But then you go through something like this and some of those memories start coming back out. Go ahead.
I couldn't agree more, and that's avoidance right there. That's one of the five symptoms of post-traumatic stress. I think you're right, it is a self-defense mechanism that our brains will block out those memories so that we can, it's our unhealthy way of trying to move on.
Yeah. I'm sure it serves a purpose, if we were, you know, doctors with a little more knowledge of the situation or whatever, that we knew what was going on with the brain. You know, I'm sure there's a purpose that our brains are, you know, conditioned to protect us, to get us through a situation. You know, you're a good friend just, you know, dies in front of you or something like that. Like, okay, brain has to do something to get you through that situation so that you don't become that next, you know, casualty in that situation. So, so yeah, the brain does some crazy things. And I learned about this, with my wife. This was a little over 2 years ago now. She started having some seizures, and, first time ever. And that she was having this. And, afterwards, after she got out of the hospital and everything, her brain just wasn't connecting right. Mm-hmm. Like, she was having trouble forming sentences and things like that. And just the way the brain works. And I know these are two separate things. One is a traumatic, you know, experience that you had versus a, trauma to the brain itself. Mm-hmm. But when your brain goes through trauma of any sort, it's not going to come out on the other end, you know, functioning 100% the same way that it was before, probably. So,
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, I think that's one of the key aspects of prolonged exposure is, you know, teaching your brain to gradually confront those situations rather than avoiding them. Because if you're just going to block them out, I mean, they're always going to be there. And unless you confront them and deal with them in a healthy way, that's the only way that you're going to move on from your trauma.
Yeah. And so when you are going through this, you said in some cases you're being exposed to the thing that triggered this event, this trauma, many times over and over and over in the same, you know, 60, 90 minute sessions or whatever they are. You know, how soon after you started going through this, did you start noticing that these outside influences were not affecting you the same way that they did at that New Year's Eve party?
Yeah. It was gradual, but, it was very evident by the end of the 6 weeks. And, sorry, I forgot to mention the other aspect of prolonged exposure, but that's the in vivo experiences. So the first part of PE is doing the imaginal. So that's retelling the traumatic memory. But then the in vivo exposures is when you gradually go out and confront whether it's the situations, the places, the things that are reminders to you of that trauma that you experienced. And so for me, that was, you know, kids crying, balloons popping, fireworks, you know, getting caught in traffic. So what they do is for homework, they'll obviously start you out with a very, I guess, low risk assignment. So you'll go on YouTube and watch a video of kids crying for 5 to 10 minutes. And you do that for as long as it takes until you, start to feel so stressed where you can't do it anymore. And then, you know, the next week you'll maybe bump that up to like 15 minutes, and you keep pushing yourself out of your comfort zone. And so you might watch a YouTube video of balloons popping. And then maybe like the next week you go out and try to pop some balloons yourself, or, you know, go, you know, watch some YouTube videos of fireworks and then go out on July 4th and see them in person. And, you know, these were really intimidating things for me. I couldn't even be around my niece and my nephew growing up, because when they cried or even when they played, it reminded me of seeing, you know, dead and dying kids in Afghanistan. And it was such a weight off my chest going through this program. It was a life altering experience. I can go out on July 4th now. Like, I used to have to like either lock myself up in a basement or go camping like in the middle of nowhere on July 4th so I could get away from fireworks. And now I'm able to spend time with my family. So it's a really amazing experience. Might be familiar with the CAP scale. So I believe it's the clinician administered PTSD scale. So it's how your mental health professional at VA will measure your PTSD. Before I started treatment, I was in the 80s. And so that's a severe rating for post-traumatic stress. by the end of the 16 weeks, it was down to single digits. That's nearly undetectable. So it, for me, it was just a life-changing experience and one I'm very thankful for.
Yeah. And it sounds like it, you know, in your case, anyways, it worked wonders, you know, from going to where you had to lock yourself away on the 4th of July to being able to go out and experience it and the fireworks and all the other things. And I'm sure that the same type of thing would happen for people who have, you know, trouble with being in crowds or, you know, other things like that, you know, where they can slowly and gradually work their way to getting, more and more comfortable with being around other people, being in crowds and whatever. So, you know, there's lots of issues that come to mind when I'm thinking of like how this type of therapy and this exposure to these stressors would help. And it seems to me like just hearing your story that it will really work wonders, you know, for lots of people. But like you said, it's not easy. It's not a simple thing to do. And if we do need to be careful about this and do it, you know, under, you know, some sort of supervision with mental health professionals, and not just have people go out on YouTube and start, you know, watching videos of balloons popping and, you know, guns being fired off and all this other stuff, because that might send them down the wrong path, and we don't want to do that. So definitely, you know, go to the VA, check out, you know, other mental health, you know, options that are out there, and you know, work with them, work closely with somebody to do it the right way so that you're not, leading yourself down the wrong path and unnecessarily torturing yourself, with that type of thing. So,
No, I mean, you're spot on. I think you mentioned this earlier that it's not a one size fits all approach. And so while PE, you know, worked wonders for me and really changed my life, it might not work for everybody. Everybody has different traumas and different experiences and different things that'll work for them. So there's a variety of different treatments and therapies that are out there. If you want to go use an alternative therapy, it's all the power to you. In my experience, I really loved my VA psychologist. She was wonderful. Very culturally competent. She knew everything there was about military and veteran culture. You know, she's been doing this for years, very trained and professional, and I'm very thankful for the experience.
Yeah, that's great. Now, we also talked last week when we were on the phone chatting with each other, that you told me about, you know, how after getting back from Afghanistan, getting out of the army and everything, you kind of felt like you needed a sense of purpose, and you had a, you know, kind of that little hole. And I think a lot of people who are recently separated from the military, they kind of feel like they're missing something, you know, that missing that sense of purpose. And so you ended up with the Peace Corps, which, you know, took you to Africa, took you, you know, all over the place there. And so what, you know, take a step back and talk a little bit about what prompted you to get involved with the Peace Corps and what you ended up doing with that.
Yeah. So, coming home from Afghanistan, I joined for the GI Bill. So I wanted to go to college. So I applied to UVM, got in, I think the year after we got home. It was a pretty rough start, and I had a lot of adjustment issues. You know, I don't think I slept for 2 years, 2.0 average. So I was getting straight C's. It was a pretty rough experience. And on a whim, I just started volunteering with this alternative education program called Youth Build, for high school dropouts, you know, young adults who've had minor run-ins of the law. And so what they do is they spend half their time in the classroom doing, you know, the basic reading, writing, and math skills they need for, you know, their high school diploma or GED. And then they spend their other half of the time on construction sites getting a certificate. And so I spent a year with these students, you know, mentoring them on construction sites in the classroom. And then every other Friday we go on a volunteer service project. And I think working with these students, I got to see that a lot of them were just dealt a bad hand. They had bad childhoods. A lot of them had post-traumatic stress too, from having messed up parents and messed up childhoods and really bad experiences. And so I got to see like the positive impacts of my relationships with these students. And I think volunteering with that organization really helped change my life around. I started sleeping. My stress disappeared. I brought my GPA up to a 4.0. And I think it was that experience that had reinstilled my sense of purpose and sense of belonging again. And one of the things that had led me to the Peace Corps.
Yeah. And I think you touched on a couple points there that are worth mentioning. One is that sometimes when we hear PTSD and we just instantly think military, people who were deployed in a combat zone and whatever, those are the only people who can have PTSD. And that's not necessarily true. You can be in a car accident. You can, you know, grow up with abusive parents, or you could, all sorts of things. Sexual assault, all types of things that go on, could create PTSD. It is exactly in the name. It's post-traumatic stress, and after a trauma of any sort, you can come up with this type of stress. So I think that's important to point out too, so that we don't have that stigma just attached to military service members, veterans, and things like that. The other thing too that you're talking about is that sense of purpose, and how that helped kind of reduce some of your stress and reduce the issues that you were having and that you were working through, and how volunteering for this organization helped you out to get through some of those issues. And I think that's something that I think is not valued enough these days, is the volunteer service. When you started volunteering, that you didn't necessarily, I don't think you, based on what you said anyways, I don't think you were necessarily seeking out a way to reduce the stress. You were just doing it because it was a thing that you wanted to do. But as a result, it helped you with some of the issues that you're going through, your sleep and your stress and other issues. So you ended up getting into the Peace Corps. What brought you specifically to the Peace Corps?
Yeah. You hit it right on the head there. So I was pretty naive to the idea of help yourself by helping others. And to be honest, my first 6 months of the organization was part of an internship for college credit. And it started out with me just wanting to get some work experience. And I really found out the benefits of volunteering and spending time with the students. So with Peace Corps, I was looking to, continue serving and wanted that sense of purpose. So I had studied French in college and I was supposed to go to Cameroon. But in 2015, Boko Haram was becoming active and they canceled the program in Cameroon and said, well, we have a spot open for you in Swaziland. And I was like, well, I don't even know where that is, but sure. Yeah. So the big issue in Swaziland is HIV and gender-based violence and the highest rate of HIV in the entire world, especially among young and pregnant women. There's a really unhealthy culture of rape and gender-based violence there. And women are really encouraged to stay at home, to cook, to clean, and are very dependent on men. And so there's a huge culture of relying on, they call them sugar daddies. And often the men have multiple concurrent partners. There's a lot of abuse going on, some interesting power dynamics. And so HIV is just run rampant. And very similar to Youth Build, these kids didn't have good mentors. And unfortunately, HIV before PEPFAR, which was a program from George Bush, and the introduction of antiretroviral therapy, a lot of the older generation died off in Swaziland from HIV and AIDS. And so a lot of these young kids didn't have role models to look up to. And so I was working for a male mentoring project there called Gwaka Nvotsa, which just in the local dialect means to build a man. Really awesome organization, taking young men, giving them a positive third space. So that's away from school and away from work, where they can come and be themselves, be in a healthy environment, away from any potential abuse that's going on at home, being away from a drunk uncle, mm-hmm. you know, giving them a space where they can learn what it, you know, really means to be a man, you know, how to interact with you know, a significant other, you know, taught them business skills, life skills, also really encouraged you know, condom awareness and male circumcision, which reduces the transmission of HIV up to 40%. So an amazing program.
Yeah, but, I mean, and that's great. And you still found a way to serve, you know, even after the military through this. And I think that's great too. So, you know, I applaud you for that. And I think the people who are coming out of the military, finding a hard time trying to get that sense of purpose and that meaning and still want to serve and give back to other people, you know, this is another option that sometimes might get overlooked, you know, yeah, by some people. So,
yeah. But no, it was an amazing experience. I spent 2.5 years just living in rural Africa and in a cinder block shack. And sometimes it was pretty rough, you know, not having water, electricity, mm-hmm. had to wash all my clothes by hand. So it was an interesting experience, but one memory I'm very thankful for. I met this Afrikaans farmer, named Jakob, and Jakob was actually the COO of this local company that ran sugarcane safari retail operations throughout South Africa and in Swaziland. And, Jakob was he was a former colonel in the South African Defense Force during apartheid, and he fought in the Angolan Bush War. So we definitely bonded over being former soldiers turned farmers.
Right.
So Jakob, he's a pretty jolly guy. He's got a big Santa Claus belly and a pretty ruddy complexion from spending so many years in the African sun. And we built a really close friendship. And the South Africans, they love to host. And I honestly can't quite describe the feeling of a hot shower, you know, freshly brewed cup of coffee and a proper meal after spending months in the bush. So he was a great host. But I remember one night after polishing off a couple of bottles of red wine, Jakob asked me into his study. And there on his bookshelf were some pictures of him and his buddies on APCs in Angola. You know, he spent a decade fighting there. He showed me some framed medals he had for valor. And it was a really personal moment for him. And I don't think he had many fellow veterans to share that with, you know, mm-hmm. being a farmer in South Africa. I looked into his eyes and it was clear that he was in a lot of pain, and he started to cry, and we, you know, we hugged, and it made me think that, you know, Jakob's war was 40 years ago. He was in Angola back in the 80s. And I think then that's when it clicked for me that the war is going to be with me for the rest of my life. But it's not going to prevent me from achieving what I want. Jakob, he was able to get advanced degrees in business and soil science. He married the love of his life. He has a beautiful family. And yeah, the war might be with me for the rest of my life, but it doesn't mean that I'm not going to be able to have a long, happy, and meaningful life. And I think I spent a lot of years trying to become that person I was before the war. But I don't think that you can ever really heal from the war. I mean, you're not going to be the same person you were before. I think you got to come to terms with the person you've become now and try your damnedest to carry on and live a happy and long and meaningful life.
Well said. I think that's 100% true. And I would suspect maybe that some of the issues that people are having are trying to get back to that person that they once were before the traumas of war took place, and they're swimming upstream. It's a, you know, an uphill battle, and it's not an easy thing to do to get back there. And in some cases it may not be possible, or nor should it be. I don't think, you know, we all have had experiences throughout our life, good and bad, that shape who we are. And we just sort of have to accept the fact that this is who we are. And try to make the best of it. Don't get down on ourselves. Don't blame people for what we are, what we've become. You know, try to make the best of the situation that we've the hand that we've been dealt, if you will, you know, the situation that we find ourselves in, you know, make our future, you know, brighter by learning and growing from these experiences. You know, we don't all learn from good experiences. We learn from bad experiences too. And we grow and we become better people because of it, depending on what we do with that, those lessons that we learned, or if we learn anything from them at all. So you definitely, said that well.
I think you're describing post-traumatic growth, the idea that you can come out of a traumatic experience and once the dust and ash settles, be a better person because of the suffering you went through. I think people, you know, often they'll be more spiritual, they'll be more connected with the deeper meaning of life. They're going to have a greater appreciation for life, and you're not really going to sweat the small things. So I think that it is very possible to become a better person, a more developed person after traumatic experiences.
Yeah. And you, I think you just need to let that growth happen. And instead of fighting to get back to who you were, you have to allow that growth to happen and see the positives from the situation. You know, I lost a brother and that was a pretty traumatic experience to me. You know, and I've talked about this a little bit before on the podcast, but you know, shortly after finding out that Stephen had died, probably within a half hour or so, our unit started getting attacked from you know, insurgents that were in the area, and I had a squad to lead. I had to go and take care of them, make sure they were had everything that they needed, that they were positioned where they needed to be, all the things that a squad leader does. And I had to drop my emotional baggage, you know, on that hill and yeah, leave it there and go take care of my guys, because I don't know if I would have been able to forgive myself if I let my emotions overtake me and you know, something happened to them because I wasn't fully there. And so I very quickly had to move on from that negative emotions that I was having. Not to say that I didn't still have them, but I had to push through the cloud that was there, that was hanging over me, and see the situation for what it was. And I had to get clear on things real quick.
I'm sure it wasn't an easy thing to do.
No, it was probably one of the harder things I've ever had to do, but it, I mean, that moment changed me forever. You know, that from the time that I found out that he was killed to the time that I got off that mountain, I remember details from that day like they were yesterday. You know, so we're talking about how our mind and our memory, you know, do crazy things. One person can have a traumatic experience and completely forget certain things of it, and then someone else who over 10 years later still has very vivid memories of that experience. It's really crazy how the mind works. It's an interesting thing, actually. Switching gears a bit. One of the other reasons I wanted to have you on the show was to talk about what you do with the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. And when we spoke last week, you told me about some of the legislation that you were working on getting pushed through and how people can get involved with the various legislation that's being proposed, you know, now and in the future. So could you tell us a little bit about, you know, all the things that you do and how people can get involved?
Yeah. So 2015, we lost the mortarman in our platoon to suicide, Joshua Pallotta. And a good buddy of ours, Wes Black, was diagnosed with very aggressive cancer. And I wanted to go down to DC and advocate on behalf of the men and women that I served with. And I was really lucky to found this great job working for IAVA. So my official title is Government Affairs Associate. What I do is I research a variety of different issues that are affecting post 9/11 veterans. And we go up to the Hill and advocate for the healthcare and benefits that the post 9/11 veterans need. So IAVA, we're the largest post 9/11 veteran service organization, got 425,000 members across the country. We're usually more of an online based organization, but we do have two in-person advocacy events every year. We call them our Storm the Hills. So every spring and every fall, we'll bring in members from across the country. We'll spend about a day giving them advocacy skills, then we'll take them up to the Hill. They'll meet with their elected officials and talk about the issues that are most relevant and the issues that they're really passionate about. It's always an amazing experience. I think it's pretty powerful to be able to take a personal story that you have and go up to the Hill. I mean, not many people can say that they've gone to lobby their congressman or their senator about an issue that is so important to them. So beyond the advocacy, IVA, we also have a 24-hour resource referral and peer support line called Quick Reaction Force. So if you're a veteran in need of housing, you want to be connected to benefits, or if you're just looking for a peer to talk to, it's a great resource to reach out to. Everybody who works for the Quick Reaction Force is a fellow veteran. All of them are certified counselors. They know, you know, exactly what you're going through. So if anybody's in need of talking to one of our QRF specialists, they can be reached at 855-91-RAPID. You can also check them out on our website as well if you're looking to talk to somebody later. It's a great resource for vets, and definitely always there for you if you're needing any assistance.
Yeah, and I will have a link to the IAVA website, and also to the Quick Reaction Force, some information about that. I'll have links to that all in the show notes for this episode. But I'll also have it up on the Veteran Resource page that I have on the Drive On Podcast website, where you can go and check that out. So, you know, if you are not sure about it and you don't want to just pick up the phone and call, you want to find out more information about it, there's a link going to be there that you can go and check that out. And you can see if it's the right thing for you, as well as plenty of other resources that are out there. So, you know, ultimately I want to help get people in touch with the right resources. So, you know, whether this is the right one for you or not, you know, is up for you to decide, but it's definitely going to be an option that's on our website with resources. And you spoke about Wes Black, earlier. I had him on the show last year. It was around this time last year, the time that we're recording anyways. By the time this episode comes out, it'll be a few months later. But, so he served with you in Afghanistan, and his message was really inspiring, talking about the burn pit exposure that he went through, and actually so inspiring that I look back at some of the stats, downloads and episodes, and of the two episodes that I did with Wes last year, those are the two of the most listened to episodes that I've ever had on this show. So many people resonated with it. You know, they really liked his message and how positive he was. He's really a great guy, has a really great message. So for anyone who wants to go back and listen to those episodes, those are episodes 13 and 14. You can go back to look for those. And then you mentioned, Josh Pallotta. I had his mom on the show a few weeks later, she talked about the issues that he was going through after getting home, and how unfortunately he ultimately took his life, that was a hard episode to listen to, the struggles that not only he was going through, but also, what she's going through after the fact, after losing her son, that manner, and so really lots of traumatic things have come out of war. And a lot of times, we just think of war as, the traumas that are involved with war as the combat, the shooting, the grenades, the missiles, the bombs, the whatever, as those things are pretty traumatic because they're high impact and they literally can blow up in your face, in a moment's notice. But, there's these slower, ticking time bombs, if you will, that are, that also have a big impact, and not just on the soldiers who are on the battlefield, but on their families and their communities and their friends and everything else. You know, Wes with the cancer that he's fighting, you know, this is now 10 years later, that he's struggling with this and, you know, going through all of this, and it's a terrible experience to have to be going through. But you know, if you go back and listen to that episode, the positivity just is oozing out of this guy. It's crazy, you know, to be given this kind of diagnosis, this cancer, you know, diagnosis that is not a good outcome expected for him. But he's still probably top 10 positive people that I've ever met in my entire life.
I'd say number one.
Yeah.
Wes is a pretty rare guy. And I was speaking earlier about the men I was exposed to in Alpha Company and how they were just men of virtue. And it was very, very rare to meet somebody like Wes. His positivity is infectious. And he will always be positive no matter if we're pinned down by the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, or if he's battling, you know, stage 4 colon, lymph node, and lung cancer. He's a really, really rare character. And I'm very thankful that he's in my life.
Yeah, absolutely. I think everyone who he has met and interacted with is better off for knowing him. I know after speaking with him last year, on the podcast, some of the things that he was talking about, I just changed my perspective on things, changed my perspective on life. And I feel like I'm a better person for just having that 2-hour conversation with him, that we broke out into a couple episodes here, but, you know, just getting the opportunity to speak with him, you know, was a blessing. And then, you know, the flip side to that is the, you know, it almost is like two sides to a coin, where there are people who experience the same deployment, same situations, a lot of them, you know, obviously, you know, each individual has different experiences, but where the two people can take two different paths. You know, someone like Wes is a fighter and, you know, it's a positive, upbeat kind of guy. And that's just who he is. And that's great. Then on the other hand, there's someone else who, you know, wound up going down a much different, darker road. And you never really can tell, you know, what way people are going to go with that type of stuff. And,
you know, I think that's human nature. We all deal with things differently, and yeah, you also have to factor in, you know, your childhood experiences, what adverse things happened to you before you even joined the military. Sure. And also, like, veterans aren't a monolith. We all deal with things in a different way. And I think that's, you know, kind of leads into our suicide prevention efforts IAVA is championing. So this has been our, you know, one of our top priorities since we passed the Clay Hunt Act, you know, years ago. And so every year IAVA, we do an annual survey where we pull our members on a variety of different issues. So everything from the GI Bill, experiences using VA healthcare, the VA home loan. And we always ask about suicidal ideation. And it's unfortunately a statistic that continues to grow year after year. And I believe it's 44% of our members report personally having suicidal ideation since leaving the military. And that's a 13% increase in just the last 6 years. Mm-hmm. And shockingly, 2 out of 3 of our members report personally knowing a veteran that they served with who has died by suicide. And this is a statistic that continues to grow year after year.
Yeah.
And so it's very clear that we need a different approach. So IVA, we work very closely with Senator Tester and Senator Moran on the Commander John Scott Hannon Act. And Commander Hannon, he was a Navy SEAL who, after he got out, he moved back home to Montana and was really active in veterans' mental health initiatives up there, and unfortunately lost his battle to suicide a few years ago. So this legislation is named after him. I guess the main provision of the legislation is that it would establish a community grant program, very similar to the VA Housing Initiative, SSVF, so it's Supportive Services for Veterans and Their Families. A really powerful program, completely eliminated veteran homelessness. VA calls it a functional zero. So veteran homelessness, it still exists, but it's essentially very, very close to being eliminated. I'm sure you've heard the statistic that 20 veterans die by suicide every year. Every day. And 14 of those veterans aren't even in VA care. And so we have to find a way to address those 14 out of the 20 that aren't even getting VA care. So this grant program would address the veterans living in the local communities, these community-based nonprofits who interact with these veterans on a daily basis would be able to, you know, get them the services that they need if they don't want to, you know, go to VA for whatever issue that they have. But it's beyond just the community grants. So there's additional funding for camp therapies. Those are alternative therapies like yoga, acupuncture, Reiki therapy, nutritional counseling. Also some additional staffing plans help fix the shortage of VA mental health professionals. I think if a clinic is short a couple psychologists, they're going to be overworked and not providing the best possible care. Right. That you know, our veterans deserve. So this legislation recently passed the Senate. The House Veterans Affairs Committee just had a hearing on it yesterday. We're pretty hopeful that this legislation is going to be passing in this Congress before the end of the year. So we'll definitely keep you updated on any of the happenings.
Yeah, and this episode won't be coming out for a few weeks. So we're recording. It's actually September 11th today that when we're recording. This episode won't be coming out until sometime closer to Thanksgiving time period. So end of November. So definitely keep me posted, and I'll put something in the show notes if there's any positive changes that come out from this, if they put this into. If they pass us in the House, that would be great too. And then obviously we all know the steps of all this. So there's obviously one more step to go through there to get the president's signature on that bill to make it official, make it law. But once when all that happens, assuming it does, I don't want to jinx it by saying anything here, but but let me know, and I'll update this episode of the show notes and everything to let people know that's another thing that's out there for them to be able to help out. So wow, we covered quite a bit today. We talked about the prolonged exposure therapy. We talked about finding a sense of purpose through the Peace Corps, your role now with the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, and a little bit of reminiscing on some old friends and things like that too. So we touched on quite a bit today, and it's been a pleasure having you on the show, speaking with you. I really appreciate you joining me. But before we wrap up, is there any place that people can go to find out more about how to get involved with some of these legislative initiatives that you guys have going on, where they can maybe, I think you said there's a place that they can go to, write their senators or their congressmen and things like that.
Yeah, Scott, that's a great question. And we actually have a webpage you can reach at iva.org/takeaction. And I'd happily provide you with a link so you can include it in your podcast notes. So veterans, their families, veteran supporters can go to our website, access our Take Action page. We actually have pre-written emails to your elected officials, whether that's your congressman or your senator, on a variety of different issues. So that's our legislation on burn pits and airborne toxins, combating suicide, ensuring that women veterans get the same healthcare that male veterans do, education benefits, empowering veterans who want to use medicinal cannabis. Yeah, I'll definitely include that link in the podcast notes. And definitely, if you're interested in getting involved with IVA's legislation, definitely visit our website and you can take action. And these pre-written emails are a great resource, and would love to have your support on all of our priorities.
Great. And again, all of these things that we talked about, I'm going to have links in the show notes, including, you know, the different legislation that we talked about. I'll try to have links to all that so you can read up on it, educate yourself, you know, to see if that's something that you want to get involved with, and do more to help push these things through. I'll put all that information in there. So again, really has been a pleasure speaking with you, Ryan, and I really appreciate you taking the time to share your personal story. I know sometimes that's not the easiest thing to do, but that's it certainly is beneficial to a lot of people. So I really do appreciate that, and thank you for everything that you do. Really appreciate it.
Scott, it's been a pleasure. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Before we wrap this episode up, Ryan had shared with me after we stopped recording a story about my brother and his time in Ramadi during his first deployment. And the story was a really good story, and it tells a story of the harsh realities of war. And I wanted to share that with you. I know we kind of wrapped up the episode already, but it was such a good story that I kind of want to cut it in here at the end so that you can hear the story and some of the realities of the things that go on with the people who are on the ground fighting the war. It's a really good story, like I said. Hopefully you'll take a second to listen to it. Not a long story, but it's really a good and powerful story. So hopefully you take a second to listen and get something out of it.
So I forget when exactly it was during our deployment. I think early in the deployment, so probably like March, April timeframe. So we were on our COP in Afghanistan, and I think we were in the showers. I noticed that Steve had the face of a woman with a shroud tattoo on his shoulder. And I was curious, so I asked him about it, and he told me the story when he was in Ramadi, it was 2005, 2006, and he was driving his Humvee, you know, out on patrol, and this female civilian just ran out in front of his vehicle, waving her arms at him, and she stopped their patrol and warned them about an IED, a roadside bomb that was, you know, buried up in the road ahead, and essentially the woman had saved his life, you know, probably the lives of everybody in his vehicle or the lives of everybody in the vehicle in his patrol. And I think Steve and the entire platoon were pretty thankful of this woman, you know, warning them. And so they went back later that week, and tragically they found that the woman and her entire family was beheaded. So he told me that's, you know, was the reason behind the tattoo. He had her image permanently memorialized on his back to highlight, you know, her sacrifice, you know, her mm-hmm. life for his. And probably one of the most profound stories I had ever heard from Steve, just that he wanted to highlight permanently what this woman who didn't even know him, you know, wasn't even, you know, his same religion or nationality. She gave up everything to save his life.
Yeah, not just her life, but it was, from what I understand, the whole family. Her whole family paid the price for her decision to save these people who she didn't even know, you know. And that's, yeah you're right. It is a very powerful story, and it does tell some of the horrors of war. You know, having that type of experience and seeing. I can only imagine what it felt like to see this family just, you know, slaughtered for helping these Americans, you know. Gosh. Yeah. And yeah, I don't even know. It's just a terrible situation. But I really do appreciate you sharing that story. You know, it's a difficult story. And I think it's good for people to hear, you know, what goes on over there, because mm-hmm. I mean, there's a saying war is hell, but it really is, you know, yeah. It's not a, not a, not a fun and happy time. So
yeah, and I don't know where I'd be if I didn't have guys like Steve watching out for me. And you know, our entire deployment, Steve watched very closely over me and the other guys. And I'll never forget in June, our platoon, we had just dismounted from our trucks, and you know, pretty close after dismounting, we heard, you know, the whips and the cracks of bullets flying by us. And almost instinctively, Steve had grabbed me and he pulled me behind cover to our MRAP. And he just looked at me and he said, "Don't you fucking move." And he was always looking out for us. And I think the safety of his men was always more important than his own. And it's rare to find leaders like that. You know, somebody will give everything for you. So very, very thankful for my my short experience with Steve.
I think that comes from his years and years of playing hockey, where he was sort of the enforcer on the ice. He consistently had the most penalty minutes, and you know, he'd be, you know, the guy who, you know, knocked people off their feet, and you know, he was just there to, you know, make sure he was a defenseman. He was making sure his goalie was protected, and you know, his teammates were protected and things like that. He was a bruiser. Mm-hmm. he definitely could, you know, throw his weight around it. You know, not that he was a huge guy, you know, he wasn't the biggest guy out there, but he knew how to use his weight and knew how to throw it around. So,
yeah, you know, well, much bigger than I was. I think I was probably 140 pounds soaking wet back then.
Yeah. Well, he bulked up in during that deployment and leading up to it. He definitely bulked up, but he wasn't always that big. You know, being his big brother, I remember him as a little runt, and you know, so I can pick on him for that. Yeah. But
and I think that's one of the reasons I looked up to Steve the most, is because he was the skinny young guy on his deployment to Iraq. And I think I really looked up to him because he could empathize with me and, you know, where I was in, mm-hmm. in the platoon. I was, you know, I just turned 19. So a young, you know, private first class. And yeah, I think he looked out for me, stood up for me because, you know, he was in my shoes. And so it was really nice, refreshing to have a leader like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And he had that tough side where he could definitely be a bruiser, and he could definitely throw his weight around, and he can, you know, take care of people, you know, when he needed to. But he also had a lighter side too, where he could make you laugh no matter how bad you were feeling. And I just know from my experience, you know, I know that that's just how he was. It wasn't just like a family thing where he just would do it with us, but he would do it, you know, with other friends and family and stuff like that. You know, we'd be sitting around talking about something mundane and boring to him or whatever, and he would just completely fall on the floor and pretend like he passed out sleeping. And he would just get everyone cracking up because he was like, "I'm done with this conversation. I'm out." And he would just fall on the floor. Yeah. It didn't matter, you know, like a tile floor, hardwood floor, you know, it didn't matter what it was. It didn't have to be like a soft padded carpeted floor or anything. He would just plop right down and everyone would just be cracking up because we knew Steve was done. He didn't want to talk about this stupid thing anymore.
Yeah, no, he was always pulling pranks. And I think it was really refreshing. And I don't know if you ever read any Vonnegut, like Slaughterhouse 5 or Catch 22. So it's like this dark humor I've really only found from like those World War II American authors. I think it's a pretty rare perspective to have after going through like really traumatic experiences. So Vonnegut, he was an army infantry guy, got captured, was a prisoner in Dresden when it got bombed. and so he used this like this black satire as a way to cope from the war. And I think that was something very helpful for our deployment, was Steve always there, you know, pulling pranks and cracking jokes, especially in the darkest of moments.
Yeah.
You know, we could be on an OP getting snowed on and he'd be cracking jokes and smiling. So I think sometimes that's the best way to process, you know, something really awful is, you know, being able to find the humor in anything.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, he definitely had that great sense of humor and could really, sometimes he would use it to, and it would get annoying, but he definitely knew how to get people, how to push their buttons and get them to laugh.
That's what a younger brother is good for.
Yeah. Well, yeah. For sure. All right.
Scott, I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I really appreciate you sharing that story as well as well as all the other stories that we talked about today. So, I really appreciate it. Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com, or on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Drive On Podcast.